right. And again, I'm doing some on Facebook Live, and I'm doing it here on Zoom. And I'll record the Zoom one and post it. And usually for the Facebook Live people, if you're not on my email list, you might want to be if you want to, because I'm going to do things after I turn off the Facebook Live. I do a little extra for the NFNLP forum that's recorded and put up there. So anyway, and people send in some questions. One was about self-care. One was about a marketing question we'll talk about. And another was about clients. So a couple quick questions and then my little thing. In fact, the self-care, I will tie into the problem of elite performing performance NLP. And the marketing question was about, with all the changing marketing going on with, the traditional advertising routes don't seem to work as well. So how do you do that? How do you market in a new environment? And again, you got to look at the demographics of what it is you're marketing and who you're marketing to. If you're going to look at Facebook, I think I just read the average Facebook user is around 40. And so if that's your target market, that's what you're going to go after. If you're going after slightly younger, Instagram is a little bit more popular. So there's all these trends, and you have to stay abreast of the trends. Now, Facebook is an interesting beast. They keep changing, and we're on it now up there. Hey, hello, everyone. If you like this, click like and share. But Facebook constantly changes the algorithms and their ads. They're getting more and more restrictive. You can submit an ad if you want to do an ad, and it may get kicked out. I'm running through some challenges now with an addiction program because they just started something that you have to go through this independent third party, which lets me know it's probably owned by Facebook, that costs a boatload of money because in that addiction world, they pay like 10, 12 bucks a click without blinking an eye. I mean, a good lead in the addiction world, these people pay several hundred dollars to several thousand dollars per lead for a traditional treatment because they charge so much money. So anyway, I don't know. So you have to be creative with it. You have to, follow the trends, see what's allowed, what's not allowed. So you want to do that. Hey, Jason, Neil, Joan, hey. So again, if you like this, click like and share. So about marketing, yeah, that seems to be the wave. You know what still works though, is a specialized marketing. I did for my master trainer group, there was the ability to listen to a guy who talked about how to get earned press. It's not technically PR, it's more like earned press. Of course, you can pay for an ad, and he really focuses on like how to get on the radio. Really good stuff. And but not paid spots, not like ads. How do you get on the radio and like have them interview you, have them talk about a product or what you're doing? It's not as difficult as sound. It can be somewhat time consuming. And that's called earned media. And that's an interesting thing, especially on the radio here in the US and Canada, because people still listen to the radio, especially when they're driving and at work. There's a lot of the radio will be on in the background at work. So people actually listen. And of course, drive time, people drive in the morning, usually 6 to 9 a.m., and then 4 to 7 p.m., people driving home, people listen to the radio. And so if you can be on, the radio is the, and they can interview you about whatever topic, that's an interesting thing. And that will drive people to websites, to the things that you're doing. It's not as easy as it sounds. There's some things you need to do that. Maybe in a week, I'll do a whole little thing on earned media. But right now, I'm focusing on building the NFNLP Master Trainers group with that, and how to do that. One of the best ways we always talk about is write a book. My Master Trainer group, that's one of the requirements to graduate. They have to finish a book, even if it's a booklet, 40 pages or so, and then get a professional cover so you have a book. because that makes you the instant expert. And if you do try to get earned media, if you have a book when you're talking to a radio or somewhat a TV station, it's much easier for them to look at you as the expert because you wrote a book, especially if it's on the topic you're talking about or can be related to that topic. And so it's kind of interesting and it's kind of fun. So that's a marketing question. But, you know, the old market and everything's in flux. You know, it works today, may not work in a few weeks, especially with, you know, the internet and everything. I was just at a conference talking to a guy who at one point, multi-million email sender, you know, he'd master at email marketing. And like he said, email marketing still works, but it's much different than it was even a few years ago, you know, and Facebook is a totally different animal, right? And even collecting emails is much different than it used to be. Remember, it used to be, want a free report? Do this. Well, people don't fall for that. Or they have their Yahoo account that's just a dumping ground or a whatever, Hotmail, something. An account they never check because that's, you know, they'll go download whatever the report is and do that, right? Or they just jump on long enough and then unsubscribe. So everything keeps changing. So on the marketing side, it's constantly in flux. And so you got to find out who's doing good things and getting results and just see what they do. Ask them. Maybe they're offering a class or a seminar or something like that. And a few years ago, I went out and I took some internet marketing classes, and I still stay in touch with the guys that run it. And they talk, and these are guys that live on the internet and Facebook and everything, and how everything keeps changing, what's going on. So it's just kind of interesting, you know. And I'm struggling with it with a couple other things. So that's the marketing. The client question was, in fact, I'm going to collect several of these. This was like a specific one, you know, on weight, and was they're dealing with a client that has been in, like, I think he said, Jenny Craig, Nutrisystem, a couple of those, you know, those box programs, Weight Watchers, where they did it online, a couple other things. But they couldn't, nothing seemed to work. And so he wrote me and asked about could it be more of an addiction? And so I would say yes, but actually I would argue it's not the food that's the addiction. It is the eating itself. What is the eating filling? You know, it's not what you eat, it's what's eating you. That's what I always talk about, right? It's what's eating you. Is it loneliness? Is it fear? Is it self anger? You know, what is it that is feeding your, why are you eating? That's it. You know, the food, you may have food you like, maybe it's sweet snack foods, junk foods, but you know, if they've been in things like Jenny Craig Nutrisystem and actually followed it, you know, I don't really like those programs that much. They work. And you know, if you really follow them, what begins to happen? And if my call goes out, it's because we have thunderstorms in Florida. You actually get off the sugar. So once that's out of your system, you know, then if you keep going back, then there's other things going on. So what's driving the behavior? You know, it's not the food, it's whatever the food represents, you know? And you hear that with, you know, if you really listen to what your clients are saying, you know, you pick up on some of their belief systems as they're talking. You know, everyone knows that Italians have to eat pasta. Really? I know a lot of Italians that don't eat pasta, you know? I know a lot of non-Italians that they live on pasta, whatever it is, but these beliefs start coming up and maybe that's driving it, right? You know, everyone in our family gets fat at 40, or, you know, it doesn't really matter how I look. People should love me anyway. These are beliefs that could affect their, you know, their weight loss. So we're going to talk more about that later in a specific, as I collect more client questions, on that. But again, if it's something like that, what's driving the behavior? Just like addiction, you know, when you get rid of the alcohol, we'll use alcohol or drugs. If you got the drugs and the alcohol out of your system and you've been clean and sober for a while, or non-gambling or whatever it is, whatever the addiction is, not watching porn. So it's out of your system. What drives you to go back to it? It's not the physical response. It's not the physical, you know, drive. It's not the physical, I want this. That leaves your system, depending on what the addiction is, in a few days, right? So once that's out, what would drive you to go back? Well, there's other things going on. So what is the underlying thing of the addiction? What is that addiction masking, covering, feeding, right? Then, and if you don't fix that, then, you know, the person might just go where they stay sober a little while or relapse, or stay clean a little while, relapse, or don't watch porn. Then, I mean, it's what's going on, or gamble. What's going on underneath it? Hey, Patrick, how are you doing up there in Chicago? So anyway, if you like this, click like and share. And also for my other group, click like and share on YouTube. Please leave a comment. It's how you make this go viral, to tie it back into the marketing. Another thing, whenever you do a Facebook Live, ask for the likes and shares, and it'll ask for comments. That's how it makes it go viral. The other thing you have to do, if you really want to do it, and I'm lax at this, I'm making an effort, is after you do a Facebook Live, go back, if people actually leave a comment, like the comment, right? And then respond to the comment, even if it's like, hey, great, good idea, whatever it is. That's how you make these things go viral. I was listening to somebody talk, and when they started doing that, you know, their Facebook Lives went from a couple hundred views to, you know, a couple of thousand. And also, too, just because, you know, when you're doing your Facebook Live, if you're looking at it, it only says there's like six or seven people on the thing, you might go, but that's not the number that actually see your video. Hey, John in beautiful Indianapolis, who just lost a great quarterback, click like and share, leave a comment. But if you interact with the people on your Facebook page, like, click like, if they leave a comment, actually like the like, you know, and respond back. That goes back into your marketing, makes things go viral, right? Which will make people even more likely, according to the guys that study that, to watch an ad if you put an ad out, right? And there's some people that are very good on ads. I'm going to try to bring one on to talk about how she does it. I'm trying to reach out to her now. She seems to be an expert at it. You know, she's one of the ones that will pop up in the paid feed column. I want to know how she's doing it. You know, and maybe she'll share, maybe she won't. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see. So that kind of ties back into the marketing with your Facebook Live. Now we're going to talk about what I posted, which is the danger of elite NLP, especially for trainers. And it's going to tie into self-care. You know, and what do I mean by that? Well, anybody who's been through my trainer's training knows I start at the very beginning saying, once you learn NLP and hypnosis, and if you start training people, one of the most important things you have to do is have a peer group, or have peers and a mentor. And if you've been doing it so long, maybe you don't really have a mentor right now, but you need peers that you consider on your level. And, you know, maybe not in your little expertise, but they're people you would say as peers that you could talk to. One of the danger signs, you get really good at this, and I talk about it, is you talk to somebody, they're a trainer, and they only hang out with their students, right? They only hang out with their students, you know, and or clients, right? Well, the danger in that is there's nobody to say there to say, hey, well, that's just crazy. You know, what's your evidence for this? This doesn't make any sense. Nobody will call you on it, right? And you get that little Napoleonic syndrome. You get isolated from people that can actually help you if you need it. You know, so that's one of the biggest. You start believing your own press, you know, forgetting you wrote that press. You know, you wrote that you're the best in the world at what this is, and you start actually fundamentally believing it. Maybe you need to believe it, but you have to know there's other people just as good. Once you break and you start thinking like nobody's fit to carry your water, so to speak, that's kind of dangerous, right? And, you know, so that's a danger signal, you know. And that's one of the dangers of NLP, because you start running these own patterns in your head, and you don't have any checks and balances of other people, it can get, you know, kind of dangerous. It's why in the clinical world, you know, psychology and psychiatry, especially in places, you know, institutions and, you know, bureaucracies, your clinical supervision is a part of your job. You know, you may clinically supervise people. When I worked at the prison or when I ran alcohol and drug treatment centers, I clinically supervised people. But I also had to be clinically supervised by, you know, someone above me. You know, the prison was a good one. I supervised social workers and actually the psychiatrist, you know, and my clinical supervisor was the clinical supervisor, I had a couple of them, for the area, you know, and we'd sit down we're supposed to do it once a week. We did about every other week. And it was so good because the good one, especially one of them was great. One of them, not so good. Their first question was not about the clients, you know, not about the people I'm working with, not even about the staff. Well, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? You know, what's impacting you? You know, that, you know, it's kind of like little mini therapy, if you will, right? And it helped. I could talk about how, you know, because if you're really doing really intense clinical work and you're working with people, it may bring up stuff in you. You know, it may hit a trigger you're not even aware of. You know, it happened to me years and years ago when it comes with, I was working with somebody who was a pedophile. Didn't find out till a few sessions in. And it set off all kinds of things in me, right? And so I had to, you know, and I was in a system where I was being clinically supervised. In fact, I think it was when I was getting my internship. And it was great because then I could go to my supervisor or now we'd say mentor or coach and say, this shit's driving me crazy. How do I not just reach over the table and choke this person? You know, how do I do what I'm supposed to do, you know, and not let my stuff get in the way, right? And I needed some outside guidance for that. And the minute you start thinking you do not need that in any way, shape, or form, you've drank the Kool-Aid, brother, sister. You're the ship's going down. You may be on the back of the boat, but it's going down, and it usually doesn't end well, you know. Because again, that's the danger of this, right? You can set it aside, you know how to like totally center, use an NLP technique to put it aside right now and keep going, and then it just keeps doing this. So you want to be able to have someone, you know, if it's not an official mentor or coach, you know, a colleague, somebody you can sit and talk to that say, especially if you run into some problem clients. Or if you're a trainer, problem students, you know, how does that happen? So that's one of the problems, you know. And the other problem is we start thinking we're invulnerable, right? We start thinking we can handle everything at every time. And, you know, that's a danger. And again, with the NLP and the hypnosis, put ourselves in trance, maybe set aside personal pain that you should be, maybe go have looked at. You know, is it just a pulled muscle or did you do some real damage? Is it this, what you're using? Maybe some self-hypnosis, NLP techniques, you feel better, you keep plowing through. So you're not taking care of yourself, right? So you're not, and again, if you don't have that group with you that you can share with, or that can say, you know, is everything all right? Your game's off a little bit, you know, a few years ago, I was doing some trainings. And I was up in Canada with my dear friend, Georgina Cannon, right? And she goes, is something off a little bit? You know, you're good. And she made the comment, sounded like a professional sports coach, you know. She goes, don't get me wrong. You know, you're good enough that you're 80 or 90% still better than someone else's 100%. But, and so we sat and talked. And there were some things going on in my personal life. And, you know, I never bought into, and I had good clinical supervisors that taught me this whole idea of you just leave that at the door and you're fresh when you walk in. Well, that's not human, right? It's easier said than done, right? Especially if it's something really going on, right? And so you've got to be able to do that. You know, I always tell my horror story, one of the worst trainings I ever did. And I don't know if it worse, but I blew this thing up. It was quite a while ago, but it was over on the other coast of Florida in Miami. And I got invited to go over, and there was a hurricane. There was a hurricane. I had damaged my house. I had damaged to one of my offices, one of my offices at the time. All this stuff was going on. And so they were, the training was originally scheduled to come over to my office where I had a training room, and the training was going to be there. Right. So like on my home turf. And, but because of the hurricane and things, all the people that were coming out of the class of, I think it was 12, like 10 of them were coming from the Miami area and one or two specific people over there. So they called, said, you know, they found a space for me to do it over there. Would I come over there and do it? So I got a hold of the other people. I'm giving you way too much background. One of them agreed to go to the other coast. They have family there. And the other said they'll just wait. So I went to the other coast. Now, again, the hurricane had just happened, dealing with damage, totally wiped out one office. The other one, it was Hurricane Charlie. So it was bad. And then there was another hurricane. It was bad. There were like two hurricanes in a row. At the same time, my daughter was deploying again when the war was really cooking, and they had the insurgent, you know, the surge going on, as they called it, right? So I was not sleeping well, right? And again, you know, this is going to tie into the thing I was going to talk about, self-care. You know, I wasn't sleeping well, which means, you know, and then when I'm not sleeping well, but agitated and upset, I wasn't eating well because I was worried. So all this took off. And then I decided to go to the other coast, right? And so, and I wasn't mentally prepared for it because I geared up. I was going to teach at my place, right? So now I'm teaching somewhere else, kind of a foreign source. And so I'm there, right? I'm tired. I'm not doing well. I had to stay at this one hotel, nice hotel, except because of all the first responders, they were like basically hot bunking it, as we used to say in the military, right? So guys would come in, they would sleep for like, you know, 6-8 hours, then get up and then go. And then another crew would come in, they would go to bed for a few hours, and this was going on. Of course, when they first get off, they're working hard. You know, they're cutting through, they're doing the things first responders do. So they're drinking beer and they're having food and pizza, and it might be, you know, midnight, 1 in the morning, but they just got off work, so they're on it relaxing. So the place is noisy. I'm not sleeping well, which added to it, you know, and because of the hurricane, it was weird over where the training was. And anyway, I'm in the middle of, I'm in the training, and I just blew up one day, right? Because I just lost my temper. I started screaming at people, and especially one person, you know, you want to teach the damn class, goddamn class, you can teach the goddamn class, I'll leave, screw this, I don't need it, right? And then right when I got back to the back of the room, I'm like, uh-oh, I've kind of thrown down the gauntlet. What do I do now? And I'm like, shit, I can't back out, right? I can't back out from a training standpoint. So they said, oh, we want you to finish the class. I turn around and go, here are the rules, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And for that, for the rest of that training, I was drill sergeant, you know? I was drill sergeant. I was da-da-da-da-da. And to this day, a couple of those people don't like me. Well, one person was there who ended up sponsored a couple other trainings many years later. Go, yeah, everybody else said you were so nice. Then you come over here and you were a complete asshole. And you know, so then she came to another training and I was more like I am most of the time, right? And I told her, well, you know, and afterwards I did apologize to some of the people. I said, you know, there were some other things going on. I wasn't doing the self-care, right? And again, that's one of the problems with the elite performance kind of NLP, where you start thinking you can do more. I'm not human. I can handle this, whatever this happens to be. Put the pencil down. I'm not running an orchestra here. So anyway, it was kind of interesting. So I had some fun with that, right? And I learned a lot. And that day after my blow up, you know, I went home and I called a couple friends and that I consider colleagues, and was telling them what's going on. And they were like, well, that, basically they helped me regroup and reset my mind, right? And And I altered my training schedule that time. One of the few times I altered my training schedule. Started a little later, took a longer afternoon thing so I could go take a nap. I mean, it was fine. And the people made it through. So, excuse me, and that ties into self-care. You know, and again, that's one of the other problems with the paradoxes of learning NLP and hypnosis at the elite level. You know, you begin to lose some of your humanity, right? So that's something to think about. Do you have peers? Do you have people that you respect? Do you have someone that can call you on your crap, you know, if you're going overboard, right? And if somebody calls you on, if your first response is like they're mentally ill, they need to go away, you know, basically then you have to look at, are you a trainer? Are you a teacher? Are you a therapist? Are you developing a cult, right? If you really want to develop a cult, that's cool, you know, and you have to, you know, when you have someone break with your cult, you've got to ostracize them totally. But that's, you know, that's something we got to think about in our own heads. And it's kind of hard to do, you know, and I talk about that a lot in my trainer's training. Keep that in mind, right? You're still going to have all the same issues. And I'll tie this in as we wrap this up, because I always say I only want to keep these 30 minutes to an hour max. On self-care. You know, I talked the other day on something that this year at a couple of the conferences, I kind of backed out a couple of the social things. Not all at the one conference, HypnoThoughts. I was at the bowling tournament. I had a blast. Everybody's, you know, and I'll come back to that. They're drinking. And it was a great time. Didn't bother me at all. You know, but I kind of backed out of a couple of the other social things I usually go to. Right. And because my head just for some reason wasn't in the right space. Right. Now, one of the things that happens if this is happening to you, tying it into the elite performance NLP being a danger. One of the things you have to always remember, if you're in a bad space, just like your clients, then you're trying to redo your own head from being in a place of a bad space. You're operating with a faulty program. You know, you already got a bad program running, and that bad program now you're going to use to try to rewrite the program that's not working. You need someone else to help you, or you need, you know, something else. You need to wait till you're beyond that. Then if necessary, look back and maybe forensically try to figure out what was there anything going on that could have altered, you know, that made the mental state that it was. You know, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, what was going on that might have challenged it, right? But while you're in it, you're in it, you know? You can't, you know, when you're in the middle of the forest, that's all you see is the forest, right? You're in there. You know, the tree is right in front of you. It's hard to see the bigger picture. And so that's kind of, and I couldn't put my finger on it, and I talked to a friend of mine, not a therapist, but someone I've known for a long time. And they're in recovery. So they're like, well, what about this? What about that? And they remind me of something and tied into the last thing with self-care, which is in the recovery community, they call a halt. Don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because when you're in one of those states, again, now we know you're messing with your blood chemicals and your brain chemicals. So you're not in the best space, and you're much more likely to be in a bad mood, to say or do things you don't want to say or do. And it's not about necessarily relapsing. It's just about not being at your very best. So so when they pointed that out, I'm like, yeah, you know, and I thought, no, you know, well, I was tired because for some reason I wasn't sleeping well, you know, especially at the one hotel I was at. I don't know why, I just wasn't sleeping well. And part of that could have been my diet. I changed my diet. I basically cut out almost all sugar. I hadn't had candy for a few weeks, no real sweets. And that changes your, you know, there's things going on physiologically. I'm a human being. Hey, Angela, how you doing? And again, click, like, and share. We need to talk about coming to Atlanta, doing NLP training. But my head wasn't right, maybe from the diet. And it kind of went into the being tired, because then I wasn't sleeping right. And there's a lot of changes going on in these things I'm doing. And there's like, that puts you in a different space. I don't want to say angry, maybe a little bit angry, maybe a little bit depressed, maybe, whatever. And these are what are. And again, they're just what are, right? And especially at the one conference I've been through for 30 years, sometimes I look around and realize all the people that aren't there anymore, right? They passed on, they're dead. All the people that their business has changed, they don't come to the conference anymore for whatever reason. It's not right, it's not wrong. It's just, you know, they're doing other things or whatever. So there's a little bit of that, right? So all this is going on, you know, and again, it's that paradox of having this stuff. And so I knew rather than show up and ruin someone else's good time because I was in a bad space, maybe it was better for me just to step out, right? Just to step out and not go to a banquet or the party at the bar. And those of you that know me a lot know at the one conference, well, both the conferences, all the conferences, there usually is a bar and people like going there. And you'll see me there, limited, you know, I'll go in and say hi, have my Diet Coke. And, you know, and that's about, you know, just taking care of myself. So, you know, that's why, you know, that idea that, you know, a trainer should take that, basically that, you know, can't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And again, if you're training, you're thinking ahead, you're trying to plan. So maybe you're, you know, they're going to lunch, so you skip lunch so you can get some other work done or plan what you have to do. So now you're operating at a, you know, your blood sugar drops, which, you know, maybe you get the, like, what's that commercial, the hangries, where you, you know, you're not a pretty person when you're hungry. There's all this stuff that you have to begin to be able to handle. So just something to think about, you know, so don't get too hungry, too angry, too lonely, or too tired. And lonely is a big one. That ties back into being the elite performer because, you know, if you don't have other people that you can talk to about this kind of problem, whether it's with your clients or whether it's with your students, it can be kind of strange, right? And again, if you're only getting everything from the bottom up, maybe they're I don't want to say worshiping you, but there's nobody to check you. So that's what I wanted to talk about. Well, and lastly, the advantages of doing some of this. I was at the one conference and someone saw me who'd been at the conference before. This was Hypnothought. And she goes, yeah, I saw you at both, you know, I see you at both conferences. I said, yeah. She goes, and I see that, especially like if you walk in the bar at where the NGH, National Guild of Hypnotists conference is, she goes, either you don't have a drink in your hand and you won't take one, or you walk in with a bottle of water. And I say, yeah. In fact, if someone says, I'll get you a Diet Coke, I say, yeah. And I always watch the bartender pour it, right? Because I'm not going to blame the bartender. You know, he's just maybe served six rum and Cokes or whiskey or Jack and Coke or something in a row, or Diet Coke. A lot of people have rum and Diet Coke, right? They hear what they hear. They delete, they distort, and they generalize for my NLP people. So they just hear the Diet Coke and they figure, oh, rum and Diet Coke. And I've actually had that happen. I've watched, and the person, without thinking, they're already pouring the rum, and then they do the Diet Coke, and they put it up there. And I'm like, that's not mine. Yeah, it is. It's Diet Coke. Oh, yeah, you're right. And they're very apologetic. I'm not going to blame them. You know, it's my job to monitor my life, so I'm looking at it. So there's that. But then she said at Hypno Thoughts, we were at the bowling tournament. She came down to where we were bowling. And, you know, with the team I was on, I think they call them the Rainbow Warriors or something like that. For every strike, you know, the team took a shot of, I think they were drinking Fireball, whatever that is. I don't know. I don't drink. Haven't drank 35 years, so all this stuff's alien to me now. But, you know, so every time we got a strike, they would do a shot of Fireball. And it was the same like last year. And so I had my bottle of water, right? And it was funny that, of course, I don't drink. And the other guy, young guy there, who this year just doesn't drink. I think he's training for something. You know, I think he got three strikes and I got like four. We got the team drunk. The two guys that don't drink got the team drunk, right? But every time they would do the shot, I take my little water bottle, take the top off, and go. And she came up and said how that was so, she liked it. She was really impressed by it. And I said, yeah, thank you. You know, and I forget about it, but, you know, I was taught that many, many years ago to do that, to have my thing right in front of me, right? And in fact, if you ever see me do that at a conference where there's that, if I set my water bottle down and doing something like bowling, when I pick it up, I take the top off, I'll take a tiny sip before I take a big sip. Why? Somebody else may have, I don't say switch water bottles, but what if I picked up the wrong water bottle and someone had vodka in their water bottle, which trust me, people do it because they don't, nobody will know I'm drinking. So they'll pour vodka in the water bottle. So I know I did that when I was drinking. So, you know, and again, that's part of the self-care, but I was very touched that the person actually said this. So anyway, that's just what I want to talk about today. The paradox of learning this is you get really good at it. And you, if you practice it, you get really good self-state management, right? But you can override, the same way we won't want to do pain control on somebody to if they haven't had something checked, right? So you don't do pain control, then they end up, oh yeah, my shoulder's a little tight. So you do pain control and they learn how to control the pain and they actually have a ripped rotator cuff and it gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, we do that to ourselves. So do you allow yourself to be human? And do you have some peers and some support people around you that can call you on your crap or that you can just share with when you're having difficulties? Because we do get the students we can't handle or the clients that drive us crazy. You know, and most of us as solo practitioners, again, we don't have clinical supervision set up. So it's just something I wanted to talk about. If you like this, again, click like and share. Over there's my Facebook. Hey, if you like it here, click like and share later. If you're watching this on YouTube. So I just wanted to do that. Keep in touch. Let me know what's going on. I'll talk to you soon. Let me turn the Facebook off. Great. All right, here. Yeah, so that's just what I want to talk about is self-care. Those of you have heard me talk in my trainer's training know that I talk about that a lot. Self-care, taking care of yourself, monitoring that, you know. On the upside, if you need to do a short push, we have the skills to do it, you know. So that's it for this week NLP Forum. I will be posting more later, and we'll have it the next few weeks. I may skip a week because I have to be somewhere else training. So maybe I'll pre-record one. I don't know. We'll work around it. It'll be most Wednesdays at noon in FNLP Forum until we're really cooking, and then I can get someone else to step in and do a forum. So I shall talk to you all soon. Have a great day.